Hello, fellow griever. This is the Leftover Pieces Suicide Loss Conversations podcast, and I am Melissa, your host. This week, you have found yourself with me for one of my shorter, solo, down the rabbit hole episodes. Here, I take you with me on a journey of sorts, through thoughts in my own griefy mind. Some days, I may tackle topics as if I am in Alice's shoes, slaying the Jabberwocky. And on others, I may end up in my own pool of tears. Or I may just go a bit sideways and paint the proverbial roses red. But I always promise an adventure. So let's dive down the rabbit hole and see just what sorts of madness we might discover together. I am glad you have joined me, because while I do know how lonely this grief is, I also believe we needn't be alone. Welcome. Hello, fellow griever. Welcome to the Leftover Pieces Suicide Loss Conversations podcast, and I'm Melissa, your host. Today, this is season 5, episode 7, and it's actually part 2 of a 3-part series I'm doing called Mindset, Motivation, and Monkeys. Last week, we talked about mindset, so if you have not listened to that episode, it's not necessary in order to listen to this one effectively, but it might be helpful since I do build on each week and the weeks before as I go in these series. So last week we did talk about mindset, which is, of course, a person's way of thinking and their opinions. You know, of course, I would argue that we all have a choice in those things. So some of it is about intentional choices that we make on what our mindset is going to be. And that's some of what that episode tackles. Today, we're going to talk about motivation, which by definition is an internal state that propels us to engage in a goal-directed behavior. So you can see how it's important that, you know, getting a mindset that works for us is a good first place for goal setting or achieving the things that we want to achieve. But the reason motivation follows that, and some people might argue that you need to be motivated first, I actually think your mindset has to come first, and then you have to figure out how to find the motivation to get there. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is how do we get here to the motivation point? And I'm going to tell you that I think that number one is a bit easier, and maybe that's why these things build on themselves as I talk about them, but it's somewhat easy to think, what goals would I like to have? What's the mindset that I should have? But then actually finding that motivation to move yourself forward, to me, that's a little bit more difficult. They do go hand in hand. But I'm going to tell you that I think the first answer that I'm going to give you is at best existential, because it's finding more peace and calm, or creating more peace in our life. And you might be saying, what the heck to that, right? Because that's like telling a kid to just be, quote, good, unquote, right? What does that mean? It can mean something different to everybody. And that's the same kind of thing as just telling somebody to find more peace and calm in their life. So I want to expand on it a little bit more and not be so general. I want to be more specific in how to go about finding more peace and calm so that you can get to that place of motivation. And for what I have experienced as a griever after losing my son Alex was that self-care and tools, both when in, with intentionality, that's an important thing to say, how I got there. Because quite honestly, our brain believes what we tell it. So the first thing was the peace and calm. The second part to that is, at least for me, was balancing my body chemicals, or more specifically, my hormones. Now, before I go any farther into talking about this piece, I want to issue a kind of an official disclaimer, if you will, that I am not a doctor at all. So this is not medical advice, but rather me telling you what has worked for me and what some of my experience has been. So what I will tell you is that complex grief and trauma quite literally will deplete our body of many of the things that we need to function correctly, not only from a cognitive standpoint, but from a physical standpoint. And it's really important that we do what we can to balance ourselves, because our cortisol's off, our adrenal chemicals are completely out of whack. All the things that exist with our hypervigilance and guilt and trauma, it works against us where finding peace and calm are concerned. So to break down these two from my experiences, is there's the tools, first of all. And I know we use this word a lot, but I don't have a better word at this point. So the tools that I have used that help me to not only, you know, get to a mindset and get motivated in order to make a change and to go in a positive direction are things like meditation, crystal energy or earth energy. I draw from oracle decks, and I'm now starting with a journey into tarot as well, which is those are focusing tools. I have these are in no particular order. I do have a kind of spa shower situation set up in my house that brings me a lot of relaxation when I need that type of relaxation. I have accountability groups and a support community. That should have been, if I was putting these in any order of importance, that one would be towards the very top. I also do things like follow moon cycles and pay attention to things of the planet and the earth. I journal. I have a lot of self-care. I shouldn't say a lot, but I have several different self-care type hobbies. And I think most hobbies fall in the realm of self-care, even though we don't think of it as that. Because if it's a hobby you truly love, that's it's self-care. So for me, I love plants and gardening. I love cooking. Obviously, you know, I already mentioned crystals. I love those types of things. You know, I have several different hobbies, and we don't do them all at once, but, you know, depending on where I'm at in my life, those are some of the things. I've added more physical activity to my life, and I'm planning to add more as I go forward and build those muscles back up. I also am going to delve briefly into my experience with adding medication or supplements to this, because for many of us, this is an important tool as well to help us get balanced and, you know, ultimately find a little bit more peace and harmony in our body and mind. I personally, at this particular point, do not take any prescription medication. I have in the past, both for things like high blood pressure, but I have also taken antidepressants briefly if they were needed. And for some of us, it can be a necessity. So what I'm about to say again is not medical advice. This is based on my particular journey, which is going to be very unique compared to your own. But I do not currently take any prescription medication, but I am on a very specific set of natural supplements that has honestly taken me years to feel like I could get to a place of regulation with them. And I'm not going to name them all. I'm not going to name doses. You know, I have more specific conversations about people in my community about some of these things sometimes. But, you know, I take things like ashwagandha and L-theanine and rhodiola and topical magnesium, and I am deficient in vitamin D, so I take that. An extra vitamin C supplement, things that work together in harmony to keep me as well and healthy in both mind, body, and spirit as possible. And a lot of this, like I said, is based on me. It's based on my age, my sex, my own genetics, and it has been trial and error for me. I am old enough to actually have completed menopause. So some of them are related to that and the things that happen to us in menopause. So this is not, you know, I purposely breezed through some of those that I said because I didn't want anybody to take stock and say, oh, if I take these things, it will fix you. It's something that you need to consider asking, your doctor about and or talking to people that are licensed to give that type of advice. But for me, the tools that are physical as well as the tools that are more existential all work in tandem. And it has to be tweaked from time to time. All of these things don't work at any given time together, but they do work. Over time, I can tell you that continuing to be persistent about these tools and finding what works and what resonates and what helps, it's a journey. It doesn't, you know, that's part of why we use that word. It is not instantaneous, but if you make the commitment to it over time, it does work. I've also have to say that along with all these other things, I have learned as much as I possibly can about grief and suicide and trauma, because I believe in every fiber of my body that knowledge is power. And it's part of the reason that I put my self-guided grief to growth course together, because just understanding our trauma and what's happened to us where our trauma is concerned carries immense power. And to be honest with you, learning everything that I put into that course, I learned it first. And then at one point I decided other people needed the information as well. So I built a course around what I had learned. But the information contained in that course, along with the NLP that I did, which I think I've talked about that before, and I'm not going to elaborate on it now. It's a therapy called neurolinguistic programming, are two of the single most game changers for me as far as being able to really turn a corner and become motivated enough to propel myself in a forward direction. So now I'm going to touch base on a really, really important thing, and I want you to hear me if you feel like I don't even know where to start. My first advice is to start slowly. You just have to consider tackling one thing at a time. Slow and steady wins the race, right? So make a list. Journal about it. Journal about what things you would like to see in your own mindset and what you think might be able to help motivate you. Make a doctor's appointment. Find a community. Find groups. Find classes. Just start somewhere. Make a commitment to yourself and allow yourself a lot of space and grace, because you won't always succeed even once you have started and committed. There's going to be times that you feel like you're not succeeding. And that's part of it. That's part of being a traumatic loss survivor. So the next question I want to answer is, why does mindset and motivation matter? Well, from where I stand, quite simply, because you're worth it, even if you don't believe it yet. Because life is still worth living. Really, it is. Again, even if you don't believe me yet, you can get to the place to believe that as well. And because your child's legacy depends on it. I believe that we can't shine forward into this world for them if we are not in the right place, if we're stuck. We get to be sure that their life matters and that they're remembered. And for me, that's the biggest why that motivation, and of course, before that, mindset matters. And for me, I think, you know, you guys know I like to shoot from the hip, and honestly, but there's an element of fake it till you make it to this, right? Because over time, things change. New habits emerge. A new way of thinking and a new way of living in this new life emerges. But it does take time and patience. And our child is still gone, right? You see, nothing we do, as much as we wish we could, is going to change that. So I'm going to paint a picture of something that might help. Might help if you see your loss as a vast void or even like a chasm. Because it is. It is a chasm. But now imagine if you slowly started planting seeds around that chasm. And over time, with the right care and the right dedication, and maybe needing to replant a few seeds that don't take, you saw beautiful flowers start to emerge and fill the void around that chasm. The chasm's still there, correct? However, also imagine starting to build little safe spaces or villages for joy around that chasm, places that you can go to experience joy and peace and harmony and rebuilding amongst the flowers, little outcrops of tiny villages. Imagine now building a bridge so that you can cross more directly and not always have to walk on the outskirts. Because I'm going to tell you, I think that bridge is important because it lets you become intimately familiar with that void. It lets you cross it if you need to quickly. It also lets you walk out onto it and stare down into it at the times that you need to do that. It lets you go to the middle to sit and visit when you need to feel it all, when you need to let it into your core and you need to let it wash over you. And that in itself is a powerful tool because letting our feelings go through us and process them is so much more healthy than sticking them aside and not doing that. So allowing ourselves to build that bridge and a safe space to sit in the chasm is important as well. So once you cross the bridge, and you'll do it many times, it allows you to go back to tending the flowers and then visiting the villages. And I hope that's an image that helps. For me, I work really well with imagery, so that kind of thing helps me understand what I'm trying to do. Life is different now. You are different now. Crafting a new life is hard, and it's not one that we wanted, so it takes extra work to try to figure out how to get there. But from my experience, Alex is worth it. And now I can honestly say I know that I'm worth it too. There's a whole wide world and a glorious life to live, and our child is gone. And like I said, that won't change, but how we learn to carry it and go forward matters. That's why I'm doing this series, because I want to try to put that message out there. And I have a small challenge for you, and it has two parts. But first, I want to say, if you're in your first year, go easy on yourself. Start implementing some tools, find a community, find some support, do those things. But don't expect too much extra of yourself during your first year. Allow yourself to mourn. But if you're further along, I want you to start assessing. I want you to consider making a list. Start somewhere. You can journal, you can write lists, you can do whatever works for you. But I want you to believe that you can go from feeling unmotivated to motivated. You can also always look at my website for help. You can find community, groups, courses, projects, knowledge. You can find resources. I've worked tirelessly the last few years to build these things so that I can provide them to other grievers like myself. And I've done it because I know how very lonely this is. But I also know that we don't have to be alone. Next week, you can look forward to me releasing a conversation with a really resilient and brave young woman who has lost both her best friend and husband to suicide in the past 6 years. And then the following week, we'll conclude this series with part 3, titled Monkeys. Until next week, fellow griever, we'll talk soon. So we'll conclude here for today, but I just wanted to say a few things before you go. If you're new to the podcast and have not listened to the very first episode called Intro Episodes Start Here, all the way back at the beginning of season one, I would encourage you to do so, so that you know what to expect from the leftover pieces. Because I do have several different styles of episodes that I record, and we do release weekly, almost all of the time. So I hope that you will come back often to join us in this community of suicide loss survivors. If you have not already, also, I would encourage you to check out theleftoverpieces.com, where you can find and have access to all of the things that I currently offer. Some of those things are online Zoom support groups, links to my books, educational opportunities that I'm adding all the time, as well as different downloadables and resources for all suicide loss survivors. And if you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the podcast, or you'd just like to connect with me for any other reason, you can do it through the website as well. So until next time, I just want to remind you that I know how lonely this grief is, but you don't have to be alone. Talk soon.